Welcome back to The Media Project, an inside look at media coverage of current events. Today, I'm Mike Spain, filling in for Rex Smith. With us on the program today is WAMC's CEO, commentator, columnist, etc., Alan Shartok. Dr. Shartok, good morning.
And good morning. You may call me Alan.
You may. Okay. We also have Dr. Kaitlin Brown, the chair of the Department of Communication at the College of St. Rose here in Albany, where this program is being originated. And Judy Patrick, the former editor of the Daily Gazette of Schenectady, who is currently vice president for editorial development for the New York Press Association.
And you can call me anytime you want.
And then we can call her anything.
But not
call
late
her
for
Judy.
Dinner.
Well, the big story now, well into the second week, is the release to the Attorney General of the special counsel Robert Mueller's report that investigated whether there was a conspiracy with Russians and the Trump campaign in the 2016 presidential election, and whether there was any attempts to obstruct justice when the investigation was going on. And that remains a big story. We have Congress, the Democrats in the House of Representatives, insisting that they see an unredacted version of it so they can see everything that the special counsel included in the 300-page report. So far, all the public has seen is what the Attorney General Barr has put out as a 4-page summary, which asserts that there was no collusion between the campaign and Russia, and there was not evidence of any obstruction of justice, which today, the day that we are recording this program, the New York Times and the Washington Post reports that people on Mueller's team are upset with that assertion and say that it doesn't accurately summarize the events. Meanwhile, we have journalists pressing judges to take steps to make sure that the public sees the entire report. And we have journalists and others in the news industry stepping up to say that the coverage of the investigation over the last 2 years, despite assertions otherwise by the Trump people, was accurate, fair, and appropriate. Does anyone have any comments on that? Dr. Shartok, perhaps you do.
Well, thanks for coming to me first. You know, I never liked that position. However, I will say this to you, Mike. I think Barr has turned out to be a bit of a national disgrace. He obviously wanted the job as Attorney General. He was hired on because he was going to put a cap on the investigation. He said so before he took the job that he didn't like it. He thought presidential authority was being threatened here. So from my point of view, everything we're seeing is right on schedule. Nevertheless, what we know now is that somehow the people who worked for Mueller, who kept their mouths shut during the investigation, clearly Mueller didn't want one word getting out there. Now, all of a sudden, people are talking to the Times. And a lot of people thought that was going to happen right from the very beginning, that if they didn't put the report out there, there would be a so-called leak. Now, we see just a little trickle. It's not much of a leak. But if, in fact, they continue to obfuscate on this report, I suspect the people who are working on it for Mueller are going to be doing more than they've done up to now.
It's not a surprise, though, is it, that Barr would not accurately represent what was in the report or would only share some of it? Because, after all, he was picked by a man who claimed as recently as the past few days that his father was born in Germany when his father was born in the Bronx. I mean, this is the administration we're talking about. So it is a series of falsehoods. Whether or not the Mueller report has more damning information in it remains to be seen. But I think when you look at what Jake Tapper said at CNN, I'm not sure what people are saying we got wrong, because Mulvaney, the chief of staff with Trump, said, you know, the media got this all wrong. The media is to blame. The media reported, according to Tapper, the investigation was ongoing. Other than the people in the media on the left, not on this network. I don't know anybody who got anything wrong. We didn't say there was conspiracy. We said that Mueller was investigating conspiracy.
Well, didn't commentators and opinion pieces that were published in print and online assert that there was? I mean, there were individuals who were saying this is evidence of conspiracy and Trump was guilty of collusion. I mean, to that extent, you know, weren't some people wrong about what was going to be the outcome of this?
We don't know. We haven't seen the report, number one. And I have to say, I'm one of those people who had deep doubts about all of this. We saw Trump talking to Russians and saying, I basically KO'd the investigation into that, quote, Russian thing.
that sounded like it might be collusion when you're talking to Russians.
Right,
and
but
Russian
the but
people.
The Mueller report.
Yeah.
The summary presented by Attorney General Barr quoted the Mueller report saying that there was not evidence to support collusion.
Not enough evidence to support a criminal indictment against collusion. So
what's the difference?
There may be some evidence, whether or not there was no evidence. The bottom line here is that the Barr letter set the narrative that the media got it wrong, that there was no conspiracy or no collusion, and that's what we're going to hear until the full report comes out. And I think the media jumped on the bandwagon. I think in the early days, everybody was saying, oh, maybe we did get it wrong, or maybe we did write too much about this Russian investigation. The bottom line is there are a lot of fascinating stories with this plot line and that they needed to be covered. There were a lot of commentators on cable news. If anybody got it wrong or if anybody overreached, it was cable news, and that was on both sides, on the Fox News side and on the MSNBC side.
Well, the Washington Post and the New York Times was awarded the Pulitzer Prize for their coverage of the Mueller investigation and the Russian connections to the 2016 campaign. Was that a mistake?
Well, you know, Mike, it ain't over till it's over. However, what we're seeing now is extraordinary because we have Mueller, who was aware of the Justice Department policy about not indicting a sitting president. That's a possibility here, that this enters into the thinking of not doing it. But I agree with Judy. I don't think it was ever said that he did not conspire or that he did not with the Russians. It just said there isn't enough evidence yet to do that.
Well, in a court of law, if somebody is not convicted and they are acquitted in a trial, it does not necessarily mean they are innocent. It just means there was not enough evidence to convict them of a crime, and that's important to remember. But on my rhetorical question about the Pulitzer Prize, I want to say that absolutely well-deserved and earned, the New York Times and the Washington Post. And Steve Cole, who was the dean of Columbia University School of Journalism, which does award the Pulitzers, firm that up and certainly defends the right choice to honor these news organizations for their excellent coverage and continued coverage in the face of these wild accusations that they got it wrong. Some have even suggested they don't deserve the Pulitzer. Untrue. Except for some opinion columnists and some commentators, the news coverage, when you look back at it, was accurate, fair. 38 people were indicted in connection with the Mueller probe, and there was definitely documentation, firm documentation of interference by the Russians.
The president the president tweeted that the Pulitzer should be taken away from the Times and the Post. And one of those organizations, or maybe both, responded with a picture with their award-winning journalist saying everything was proven right. I think what's important for listeners to remember is that there is a very big distinction between those who speculate and those who are journalists. Speculation is not the job of journalism. We did not predict the outcome. We simply, as journalists, report the facts.
Mike, I just don't agree with the professor Brown here. The reason is that opinion people who write for the New York Times, they're entitled to their opinions, and they are journalists. Now, we can discuss on this program, till the cows come home, what's a journalist and what's not a journalist. I don't think a journalist is only a scribe who writes down something that may have happened that day.
There is no license, no test.
No, I consider myself a journalist, even though I write opinion.
Yes, you are, but there are distinctions. I'm not disagreeing with you. Columnists are also journalists, but a different kind. And I think that the public is having a hard time discerning because of all of the punditry on cable news.
I completely agree. I think there is absolutely confusion by the public about when someone is stepping outside and using the facts that are known to express an opinion and draw conclusions and project what may happen versus a news story that just lays out what has happened so far.
One more thing here, and that is Joseph Goebbels of Nazi fame would be proud of what Trump and his minions are doing here. What they're doing is saying the big lie again and again and again, and people buy it. Some people buy it.
Can I add one thing about this as well? Is when reporters, fact-based reporters, sit on these roundtables where the punditry is going back and forth like a pinball machine, that further muddies the waters.
Absolutely.
It is regular reporters want to be on TV. They want to discuss, but they have to be very careful not to express opinions. And just sitting there often muddies the water, and people get the impression that they have the same opinions as all the things that are being set around them.
Judy, do you think they are careful? Because I watch
them. They used to be careful.
Yeah, I think they're getting less and less careful. I think they know that their being on is dependent on their saying something.
Interesting.
To Morning Joe or to one of those people who, if they just go mumbly-jumbly, I don't see them getting rewarded or being brought back.
Yeah, and it increases their profile, increases their ability to get another job. And some of them get paid by these.
They get paid. And when they're on these talk shows,
very
often they get honorariums, sort of.
You know, I don't want people to get their expectations up about what the redacted version of the Mueller report is going to be, because we in the business know that if they start taking out the grand jury testimony, if they start taking out anything related to national security, there may not be a lot in that report that we can actually
see. We still haven't seen all of the Warren Commission report or the 9/11 report. So just to mention that. Well, before we move to another topic, I'd like to remind you, you're listening to The Media Project with Judy Patrick, Kaylin Brown, Dr. Ellen Chartok, and I'm Mike Spain. Now, a topic that was big last...
But wait, you have to say Dr. Brown if you're going to say Dr. Chartok. If you call me Alan, that's one thing.
I do apologize for misstating the appellation.
Mike and I worked together for a lot of years, and I was always Kaylin and Mike, and that's fine and dandy with me.
Anyways, a topic more New York-centric, which got a lot of attention in the last couple of weeks, has been what to do with the problem of police releasing mugshots and the mugshots being published on the internet. When people are arrested, their mugshots are taken and then released by police, and then they are put on the internet. Sometime after that, their charges are dropped, their case is dismissed, but forever their pictures are up on the internet. Companies who put these up, they're not news media companies, they're just websites, charge people money to take them down. It's an ongoing problem. As a remedy, the Cuomo administration included in their budget package, which basically means it becomes law, a measure to prohibit police from releasing arrest information, the names of people arrested, the charges, et cetera, and not including the mugshots either. There was a compromise because the press spoke out, the American Civil Liberties Union, New York's chapter, spoke out. Is it an acceptable compromise now that the police are not ordinarily going to release mugshots of people arrested, although they are going to say who's arrested? There won't be secret arrests like some people feared. Is that a good idea, Judy? I mean, you've dealt with that as a newspaper editor.
So I don't think it solves the original problem they were trying to solve, which is people are still going to be concerned that their names are circulated on the web when they've been arrested. I always want as much information as I can get out of a police agency. Whether or not the mugshots are really useful for us in the media, not exactly sure whether it's helpful to see what someone looks like, but I can't believe it got as far as it did when they were actually thinking about withholding.
They were very close to having secret arrests in New York State. And one of the ironies here is that it was very difficult for people in the press and people who watch this, like the New York News Publishers Association, Diane Kennedy, to get information from lawmakers and from the governor's office about what was in the bill. And only until we found out what was in the bill did the public find out, and then that's where the criticism came. We do not live in a secret society. You cannot have secret arrests. And that changed what happened.
Well, I keep thinking that so many members of the legislature in the past have gone to jail, that they were very sympathetic with the idea of not having their picture or their name in the paper. However, it is an interesting problem. We do know that there are some societies, once an arrest is made, the press just isn't allowed to talk about who got arrested because it's not fair to them if, in case they're proven innocent. Once they're up there, they're up there.
Yeah, it's very different in the U.S. It's full disclosure, and we have access in most cases to everything, although in the federal system, they do not ordinarily release photos, you know, mugshots. It does capture somebody in their most vulnerable times. Often they might be the victim of an assault or had been engaged in an assault. They may be intoxicated or on drugs, and the photos are not flattering generally.
No.
But they do tell who it was. I mean, if Bob Jones of Albany was arrested...
There are a lot of Bob Jones.
Right, and it does give people more information. On the other hand, once Bob Jones appears in court and a photo is taken there or other photos become available, the use of the mugshot seems to go away, yet they persist on the internet. And that is a societal problem that the internet has created. It's one of a few.
It seems like the bad actors out there have weaponized the internet. And because it's been weaponized, in turn, people are being victimized. And the individuals who are trying to pay companies to get their arrest information off the internet, I cannot even imagine the hell that they go through. Am I allowed to say that?
Yeah, sure.
Okay.
But Caitlin, when you say weaponized, just for our listeners, I think I get it. But what do you mean?
Mike had referenced it earlier that there were companies who would collect the public information from police agencies and then use that information because it was public, circulate it on the internet, place it up there, and perhaps search engine optimize it, which I'm not certain about, but it would live up there until an individual paid to have it taken down, the individual who is being victimized.
And there's always a question as to whether you can ever take anything down.
Well, exactly. in fairness, news organizations would publish a story, include a mugshot, and the same thing might happen where the charges are dropped or they're dismissed or there's some resolution of the issue, and years later, the news story might appear on the news organization's website along with the mugshot.
Sure.
And they're not charging to take it down. It's just that it's out there. So you go apply for a job. You might have been arrested when you were in college. You were at a party where somebody was under 21 and everybody was charged with some minor crime, like something endangering the welfare of a minor because you have beer where somebody 20 years old is. And then you're 25 years old, you're out of grad school, you're out looking for a job, and someone Googles your name and they see your mugshot, and it's terribly embarrassing, and they never call you in for the interview.
You know, and there's also a fundamental unfairness here when the federal courts do not release the mugshots, and often those are white-collar crimes, very serious crimes, and often those are white people.
Right.
And the people who, at the local level, who are arrested for misdemeanors or felony, often those are people of color. And so you see your local newspaper filled with mugshots of people of color, and the people who have been arrested for high-level mortgage fraud or child pornography who are white, those photos are not getting in the newspaper because the federal system doesn't release mugshots.
Do you think this will end up in a lawsuit somewhere? I mean, it's an interesting idea that one state does this and the others don't.
Well, they're following federal guidelines here, they're claiming that. And somebody may sue, but I really don't think it will be a company that does this ransoming or this extortion. I think somebody might
be a newspaper.
Yeah, it might be a newspaper. You're right, because newspapers act individually, unilaterally. They're not all part of one organization. Well, speaking of internet problems and newspapers and the news media, Facebook has made an offer to help mitigate the problems it created for a lot of news organizations by flowing their news. People have been getting news without the generator of the news, the newspaper, the radio station, the news agency, or the TV station get nothing for it. Well, now Mark Zuckerberg, the head of Facebook, has come up with an approach and worked out a deal with a major publisher, McClatchy, which publishes many newspapers across the country, to pay money, to go into a relationship with them and pay them money in order to flow their news onto the Facebook platform. Is that a good idea?
Well, I'm a little confused here. We have talked in the past about the concept of aggregation. So in other words, I know your colleague Rex has spoken about this very articulately.
His former colleague.
Your former colleague, yeah.
My former boss.
Yeah, former boss.
Longtime boss.
And long time boss of this show has spoken about, they do all the work. The aggregators come along. They take the work that has been done by the newspapers, and they don't pay for it, the aggregators. And that's unfair, basically. Why should the aggregators be getting money and everything else? You follow along, right?
Absolutely. I mean, it's a two-edged sword. The people come along, they find your story on your website, they put a link to it up on their website along with links to other stories on the same topic, politics usually, or maybe some particular line of thought like the law or the Supreme Court or something like that. In any event, they take your work. They basically benefit from it because they put ads around the links.
Sure.
And you don't get anything for it. You don't share in the benefit, but you also get attention and you get readers that you might not otherwise have.
Because
you want the readers, but you don't. You also want to get some compensation for the cost of producing that news article.
Because
it's a complication.
Well, because often when you click, as I do, on a Times Union story, although I'm a subscriber of the Times Union, it will take you to their site. In other words, they like
that's right.
that.
So it's a mixed bag. And some feel that the news organization producing the content is getting ripped off, and others feel that it's worth it because we want the attention, we want the greater notoriety of being on a hot website. I know at the Times Union, when one of their stories is picked up by BuzzFeed, suddenly the traffic on the website becomes enormous. So it brings a lot of eyeballs to the website. Yet if that was going on all the time, they wouldn't be getting compensation for all the work that they're doing.
And yet, Mike, I see that your former boss, Rex, and some of his colleagues have gotten very smart at the Times Union. Instead of waiting for the aggregators to aggregate, they aggregate themselves. So they put out their own stories and other people's stories at the same time. I think that's very bright.
Well, do you think, just back to our point here, do you think the answer to this complication is Facebook and other Google paying the news organizations for the news that they post?
You know, forgive me if I'm a little skeptical about Facebook once again trying something that they say is going to help local news, because it never works. It's usually just a little bit, and it never solves the underlying problem, which is they're just taking our content to fuel their platform to keep it going. Every once in a while, they'll come up, and it looks like a lot of money, and it looks like they're really going to help the publishers, but they don't. It doesn't really ever help.
Facebook is behind in understanding the landscape on which they're working. I saw on LinkedIn in the last week a job at Facebook for essentially a crisis communications manager who would be handling news inquiries. They are not putting the cart and the horse in the right order. They should have understood that was happening and that they needed to manage. I think it's interesting how out of touch they are with what it means to be a deliverer.
And yet they have a billion people around the globe
looking for gossip and superficial information and have no sense of what is accurate and what is not. I think that we need to encourage an education at the earliest levels, media literacy, and get our young people to understand the origin of their information.
Time flies when we're having fun, but in the little time left, the big story.
One last, Mike, I have to answer that. Newspapers are dying. Let's face it, they're dying.
How do you know what you know, Alan? You know what you know because of newspaper reporters who found that information.
Newspapers have already well begun the transition to being media organizations.
They
have a long future, the ones who do it right.
Go you. Go journalism.
Anyway, in the few seconds we have left, and it's only a few, is it appropriate all the attention the media has given to these comments by women who say Joe Biden makes them uncomfortable? Yes, no?
I'm out.
The allegations need to be studied.
Okay.
And I really want to know whether Biden's running or not. I think we're losing focus on the presidential election, but certainly the comments need to be discussed.
Well, clearly the purpose of some of these revelations have been to get him not to run.
Discourage him, yes.
Yeah.
Okay, well, that concludes this week's Media Project.
Wow.
We thank Dr. Alan Shattuck, Dr. Kaylin Brown, Judy Patrick, and I'm Mike Spain. And
we're not doctors.
We're not doctors.
And as far as that goes, you can call me Alan. Just don't call me late to dinner.